This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing.
Welcome to Author Voices on Air, and I'm your host, Rick Bell. Our next book is The Employee Millionaire: How to Use Your Day Job to Become a Millionaire with Rental Properties. Now, during the financial crisis, which erupted in 2008, thousands of people lost their jobs. They thought that was it for them. They thought a standard of living had gone forever. However, for our guest today, nothing could be further from the truth. And he's written this book to tell you how to turn that situation around for you, the listener and the reader of the book. And on that note, it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the show the author, H.J. Chamas. Welcome to the show and thank you for joining me. The one thing that I have to start by asking is how you came up with this idea that was a catalyst for the book that we're talking about today. How did it all begin and how did it become a book?
Yeah, so first of all, thank you, Eric, for having me on the show. Actually, it's quite a privilege to be a guest here. Actually, the way the book started is quite, I call myself an incidental author. So basically what happened, the moment my wife and myself, we heard the news that we're going to have a baby in 9 months' time, something triggered me just to open my laptop and start typing about the good things that happened in my life, so that at least if I'm not alive when my child will be at a certain age, when he or she will be adult, I want really to set them up for success. And I started to, all the information and content started to flow normally from my head, so naturally, because I was not planning it to be a book. So in a way, there was no red tape. I was not trying to influence or to please any publisher or so. I just was really so freely putting the content on pages. So basically, as you mentioned in your intro as well, when the crisis erupted in 2008, actually I saw a lot of my colleagues, my own colleagues in the office, as well as I heard a lot on the news, a lot of people leaving their jobs. Actually, they were kicked out of their jobs. And if we always recall this famous symphony we always hear, which is the Life Set program, everybody tells you, study hard, get a high grade, get a job, so you're set up for life. So a lot of people were set up for life and for a job, and they thought they're going to depend on it all their life, and then, boom, all of a sudden, they lost it. So something in me triggered that, no, I have a certain responsibility towards them to really share what produced great results in my life. I had the privilege of great coaches and mentors. So I thought, wow, so let me now put it in a book so that I can share with my children and with the reader who really wants to make an impact in their life. So I felt this kind of responsibility towards humans, towards anybody who wants to read the book. But also there's a second reason, actually, which is my sense of purpose. So, you know, from my experience in life and business and relations, in a way, I try to identify my purpose in life. And actually, it's very simple. I want to add value to people's life. And when I had the privilege to learn from others, I felt now I really want to pass it forward. I want to help others. And in that way, I will fulfill my purpose of adding value to people's lives.
Now, you're talking about helping other people. Now, that brings me conveniently to my next question. When you sat down and wrote the book, you obviously had people in mind that you wanted to help, people that were going to be readers of this book. Who do you see those people as? Do you see it as people that want to make a quick buck, if I can use that expression, or who are those people?
Yeah, so actually, great question. So actually, it's not a get-rich-quick scheme. No, not at all. Actually, the book is aimed to employees. It's aimed to teach employees who struggle to make ends meet. And we know most of employees do really struggle to make ends meet. We usually end the month and we have little or no money left before the end of the month. Irrespective of which country they live in, irrespective of their income level or age, even irrespective of their financial education. So the lessons are simple to help people really, specifically those people who have dreams, so that they have enough cash to live their dreams, and so that they can really stop being slave for a job that they cannot really bear or love, and also being slave for a job and always being broke before the end of the month. So I really wanted them to make a change in their life. They need to make a change, and the book is an enabler for them, where I share a lot of secrets and lessons for them to simply apply in their own lives.
Now, many people see property rental or property portfolio, as it's known, as a pension for the future. But your book suggests that it is a regular income. Tell us a little more about that.
Yeah, so basically, one of the things that my mentors taught me is, if I really want to be less dependent on a job, I needed a stream of income. So usually people start to think, I want to be an entrepreneur, I want to build a business. And really my heart breaks on those people. Usually they leave their job, and then a lot of them, I think nine out of ten businesses really then end up failing. So rental property is a safe option for every employee to keep their job, but started to have a parallel passive income, which I call in my book unearned income, whereby each property they add to their portfolio, it starts to produce for them cash flow in a form of passive income. And the book leads them in a way, or teach them, how can they increase on every property their passive income until a certain level that their income from those passive or from the rentals exceeds their current expenses, and thereby they become financially free. At that point of time, they can stick to a job they love, perfect. If they don't love their job, at least they know they are self-sufficient. Their properties can carry them, they carry their expenses, their family, and, you know, their lives in a way.
You mentioned, as I was speaking a moment ago, you mentioned that this is not a get-rich-quick scheme, which it isn't, obviously. But when you are looking at this book in a bookstore or online on Amazon or a similar book retail network, how would you describe this book to the listener, and how would you say it differs from other similar books that people might see as nothing more than a get rich quick? What makes it different?
So I think the difference in this book, basically, I think most of the coaches and books I've read about investment and real estate and opening businesses, they always never mention the pros and cons of each investment. And then they always about go pursue your dream and leave your job. So this, I think, contrary to other books and mentors and coaches, this will help readers to leverage their position as employees to achieve financial freedom. You know, so in that case, they play it kind of safe. They have one leg in a job, the other leg in the investment world, until such time they feel there is enough cash flow to carry their lives, they can step over and move to the other side.
If someone has their only income is their job, how do they go about obtaining a property? They're going to have to get a mortgage. Obviously, it's going to have to be a buy-to-let mortgage. Tell us a little of how all that works.
Yeah, so basically, of course, so the principles of investment is, because very few of employees of us have really enough savings to for them to be able to buy a property all cash. So everybody at a certain point of their life, specifically early in their career and their employment, they need other people's money, which we call OPM. And in that case, we're leveraging the bank. We're using the bank's money to sponsor our investments. Now, banks, they want to put their money in a safe investment, and they look at two things. They want a safe property, which is number two, actually not even number one. But number one, they want to make sure that the person borrowing the money have a steady stream of income. And usually they prefer employees, because they know if somebody is employed for the long term, that's a safe person, because he or she can repay back the debt. So what this book teach people is, leverage your position as an employee. The bank love you. The banks actually are after you to lend you money. The book teaches them how to get their finances in order so that they can get more and more and more money from the banks. And eventually, it will teach them how to identify the right properties, because the second equation of the mortgage is, the bank also needs a reassurance that the property has the right value and you know, all the different characteristics they look at. So the book teaches the reader is how to get sort out your financials in place, and then how to really look at properties that are below market value, so that the banks will really offer you more and more and more money because you're a sound investment for them.
At the start of the interview, and actually during my introduction itself, we talked about how the financial crisis had led to a lot of people losing their jobs. So what if you find yourself in that position and you're either already in the property markets, you've already got one or two or more properties out for rental, or on the worst scenario, you don't and you want to get into that market? Tell us how you overcome those two situations.
So basically, if you already had some few investments and you have enough cash flow that's carrying you and giving you passive income, in case, for God's sake, somebody loses their job, at least they already set. And that's the whole purpose of the book, is to open the eyes of the reader that before things like this happen, they need to be prepared. They need to start building wealth and building passive income, so that they are prepared in case something like a financial crisis. And by the way, financial crises are always bound to happen. They happen every 8 to 10 years. And I'm sure in the near future, nobody has a crystal ball though, but we're going to have something like we had in 2008 and at that time. So the more people are prepared and have passive income, the more they can weather such storms. Now, to answer the other part of your question is, what if somebody does not have a portfolio of properties or passive income, and really they got kicked out of a job? I think at that time, their chances are slim to really carry on with their lives, unless they have enough saving to really help them out. But as we know, most of the people, most of the employees, usually do not have savings, because we always used to spend money on the discretionary expenses and the appearances of wealth, and we want the those things that will make us happy on the spot, and that's a problem by itself. So if somebody does not have a job, the bank will not lend them money. However, if they already have invested in properties and they have passive income, and they lost their job, the bank will still lend them money because they already have a proven track record that they're producing on a steady basis every month of the year a certain amount of money coming from renters. And then, and in that way, it becomes another safe investment for the bank.
Okay. Now, let's move back to the book itself and your experience as a first-time writer. Now, you had the idea for the book. You've explained that you wanted to help other people, but you must have faced some challenges as a first-time writer. Tell us a little of that side of it.
Yeah, so actually, the challenges were basically, I really sincerely wanted the book to be a complete guide. Actually, I call it an A to Z guide for rental properties investment. So I wanted to make sure really that nothing was left out. Remember what I told you, I wanted this to be addressed to my child. That was the first reason. And then I thought, oh, let me share it with the world. So I really was sincerely wanted to share everything. So, and then I wanted to write it in a very simple, everyday language. Because from my experience, most books on investment and rental properties and real estate and stuff usually are very complicated, and they use a lot of technical jargon, which really becomes an obstacle for most readers. So the story, the challenge for me was, how can I relay all this information in as much simple as possible in a common language and also in a storytelling? So the book is not really like a class and I'm teaching investment. Actually, it's a kind of autobiography. I'm sharing how each mentor in my life and all those sessions on coaching and mentoring I had with them, and my personal experience and my failures. And when I brought all of those alive on paper, it was quite a challenge. But then when I really connected them together, wow, this was very rewarding at the end of the day.
Has it inspired you to want to write more books? And if that's the case, have you written anything more, or do you have anything that you're thinking about or that is already in the planning stages?
So basically, as I mentioned earlier, my first experience was very incidental. I never planned to be an author. And it just happened when I wrote the manuscript, which was intended for my child, when my wife read it, she told me, "Are you out of your mind?" "Daughter, what? Excuse me, what do you mean?" She told me, "You have great stuff here, and it will be really selfish not to share it with the world." And then I started to really connect all the dots in a better way, and then shared it with the publisher. So now, if I want to write another book, it will be more intentional rather than incidental. So possibly, yes, I did not plan for it yet, but this time, having said it's going to be intentional, what I mean here, I want to engage with my readers, my current readers of my current book, on my fan page, on my website, on my blog, on social media, to really understand from them what they want to learn about on the topic of building wealth through rental properties. And then when I really understand what they want to learn about, this is when I will start to write my second book to really make sure that I'm really addressing concerns of people who I'm engaging with, who understand, so that I can help them more and more and more.
You mentioned about your fan page, social media, websites, etc. Tell us where the listeners can get in touch with you, where they can find out more about you, about the business that you're running, and how you're helping other people, and really how they can find out more about the book.
Yeah, so basically, the readers, the fans, can connect with me on three major platforms. So it's on Facebook, and my Facebook page is Employee Millionaire, one word, or on my website, employeemillionaire.com, or on my blog, theemployeemillionaire.com. So on all those platforms, I'll be sharing, actually, I'm very generous in information. On a weekly basis, I share a lot of insights, a lot of information for free, so that I keep the engagement with the readers, and in a way try from this engagement to understand from them what do they want me to write more about.
And I'm sure you'll get a lot of feedback on that. Thank you for that. The Employee Millionaire, How to Use Your Day Job to Become a Millionaire in Rental Properties, is published by Partridge Publishing and is available direct from the publisher at partridgepublishing.com and all good bookstockers. Once again, I'd like to thank my guest today, the author, H.J. Chamas, for joining me. Thank you, kind sir.
Thank you, Rick.
And we wish you every success with your book and anything that you write in the future.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
This is Rick Bell for Toginet Radio 2.0. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Have you heard? The pages of American Patchwork and Quilting magazine come to life on our new weekly online radio show, American Patchwork and Quilting. Join Pat Sloan, our blogging and quilt designer host, as she talks about the latest trends, ideas, and inspirations. Her guests include quilt pattern designers, authors, quilt shop owners, and our editors. All quilters, just like you. Call in with your questions. Get quilting tips from industry experts. Learn about free patterns. Hear behind-the-scenes stories from our magazines, American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilt Sampler, and Quilts and More. Get the scoop on free stuff. And find out more about the best independent quilt shops in North America. To listen to a live show, tune in Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern. Just log on to allpeoplequilt.com/radio. To hear past shows, go to iTunes and search for American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We hope you'll join us because we know that quilting changes everything.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Archway Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled My Snorkeling Days, and joining me from Texas, near the Austin, Texas area, is author Jacqueline Messer. Welcome, Jacqueline, to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, is this a fresh, brand new idea for you, or have you published and written other books?
I've published various poetry books with the International Poet Society and things like that, and written books over the years for my children but never published them. This is my first published children's book.
And the stories that you published or have shared with your children, are those something that may be published in the future? Is that on the horizon for you?
That is on the horizon. I have written about 12 books. And Archway has encouraged me to continue publishing. So
fabulous.
We're looking at book number two coming out next year.
Absolutely great. And congratulations. As being a published author, something that was always on the horizon, or is this something that just kind of popped up and you decided, well, I'll give it a try?
Mm-hmm. I have always loved to write and have written. I can remember, you know, being 5, 6 years old and sitting down in my bedroom at my parents' house and writing little stories that seemed a little bizarre or, you know, just in a child's mind, I guess you could say.
Right.
But that evolved and went on to what I'm writing today.
And imagination has been always a part of your life, as well as your early days were spent with family in the military. And you traveled extensively there. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. We moved around quite a bit in the military. And, you know, one thing that I enjoyed a lot, and I think it's reflected in my books, is the different cultures that I lived in and the different people that I lived around. And even though moving around was hard at times, I cherish the relationships that I've made along the way. And I think that helps me see the world in a different way in all of the colors that there are.
Well, fabulous. And after military exposure or being involved with a family that traveled extensively, you ended up in Texas, and your book is dedicated to grandchildren. And you've also mentioned in conversation that a lot of your books were, not books, but your creative ideas were generated because you had children and had grandchildren. This book, My Snorkeling Days, this apparently is something that has been a lifelong preoccupation or something that you've enjoyed. Is that also correct?
That is correct. You know, I love snorkeling myself. So, you know, even though I get a lot from my children and my grandchildren, this book comes from the child in me, I think, more so.
Well,
they all love snorkeling as well. But, you know, there is nothing like getting in a different place from where you walk every day, putting on your snorkel, putting on your fins, and jumping off the back of a boat and just exploring the life, you know, under the water.
And it's a little more difficult to do in Texas. I happen to live in Texas, originally from Canada, and the lakes up there are crystal clear, and they are not man-made. Most of the Texas lakes are man-made. Are you able to pursue snorkeling to some degree here in Texas?
Well, you can. You just have to be selective about the dates that you do it on. Number one, do it when there have been no big storms coming around.
Right.
Number two, do it before the algae blooms in the lakes. And Lake Travis, for example, right here in Austin, Texas, you know, where I reside outside of Austin, Texas. If you get there before that algae starts blooming, it's crystal clear down there. We have
wow.
many divers and snorkelers that go and snorkel and look at the life, you know, there in those lakes. And even if you go down towards coastal Texas, you know, if you catch it during times, you know, when there hasn't been a major storm that year, those waters in the bay and out in the Gulf can be crystal clear, and you see little sargents and things like that swimming around down there. It's more grassy and not, you know, there's no coral reef there in the bay, of course, but it's a different type of life there and a different type of environment, but it's all beautiful.
And Texas also has some crystal clear spring-fed rivers, the small ones. I know near Green, Texas, there's a beautiful little river there that people mm-hmm. do tubing on. Snorkeling has become a fascination for you, and you wanted to share that with your grandkids, I'm guessing, as the first line of defense in writing this book. What also did you want to share in this story?
Well, I think one of the important things, and this goes back to, you know, living around in many places, experiencing many cultures and forming an open mind, you know, about this world. And if you look down on the coral reef, I think a valuable lesson and message to send to our children today is that different types of fish, different types of species coexist together because they help each other and they thrive, you know, on this coral reef. And I think that's very important. And I think that we can communicate that to our children through these rhythmic stories and show them how to bring that into their real everyday life and just helping, coexisting, and living amongst other people that may not always look like you or think the same as you. But I think it's vital. I think it's very important to the happiness and success of our children as they grow and move forward in today's world.
Also, you wrote the book, I'm sure, Just for Fun.
I did. It is fun. It is rhythmic. It is colorful. And just a good book to read to a child or to teach a child how to read. You know, I'm not a teacher. I have a master's in psychology, and I learned, you know, I've learned a lot about how to teach things and behaviors and that sort of thing. And, you know, through rhythmic tones, you can easily teach a child how to read, and through, you know, nice illustrations to go with those rhythmic tones and those words. So I think it's a really easy book for a child to pick up with, you know, a parent or a friend and learn the skill of reading. So it can be so much fun.
The content itself, did it take a long time to get it where you were pleased with it, or was it a very easy task for you since you had probably recounted these stories to your children and grandchildren?
Mm-hmm. I can tell you, I sat down with one of my grandchildren, and we wrote this book probably in about 15 minutes.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful. And the illustrations, did any of your family members have input as to how they were created?
I sat down with my two grandchildren, Emily and Sophie, and they told me what they wanted the characters to look like.
Ah.
So we have a little boy with red hair, and they picked out the snorkel and the fins and the, you know, the bluefish, and they just told me what they wanted it to all look like.
Beautiful. And have you received any feedback yet? I know this is a fresh release, so I don't know whether family members have had a chance to review it or not. But what has been the impression at this point?
Well, I have, you know, sold a few books and have received some videos of friends and others reading the book to their child, their grandchild. And it looks like they're having a very enjoyable experience.
Wonderful.
There's been a couple of people that have gone on my Facebook page, and they have said that it was a great book, that they really enjoyed reading it. So positive feedback so far.
Fantastic. That's one thing an author needs to hear is reinforcement of what they're doing and the path they're on. The title of the book, again, is My Snorkeling Days. It's a short read, 24 pages, but excellent for preschoolers, even school-aged children, because of the beautiful illustrations. I'm sure they will inspire the reader or looker at the book, if you want to call it that way. Jacqueline, you mentioned Facebook. I guess you have maybe put a fan page out there. How do they get a copy of your book? How do my listeners find you?
Well, you can go to JacquelineMesser.com, which is my website through Archway Publishing. You can also go through my Facebook page, which is Jacqueline Messer Author. And either one of those avenues, or you can just go to archwaypublishing.com and do a search.
Is Amazon carrying it currently, or will they be in the near future?
They will be in the near future.
Excellent. Well, they can do a search again under your name, Jacqueline, and last name M-E-S-S-E-R. And under that name, they can find not only this book, but books that will come in the future, and also get in contact with you through Facebook and other avenues. Best of luck with this, and maybe in the near future we'll get to visit again about the next adventure of maybe this same little character, or is there other characters in your mind that you want to develop?
Oh, we have other characters. We've written about bunnies and chickens and kids on the beach and let's see what else. Oh, there's just some squirrels, so many others that are going to join us in this adventure.
Absolutely fabulous. Thank you for joining me today and sharing your story. Again, my author, Jacqueline Messer. The title of the book is My Snorkeling Days. And it's about 24 pages or so, beautifully illustrated, and a book that will bring families together. Thank you for sharing your story with us today.
Thank you.
My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing, Archway Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Girlfriend It is on TogiNet. Thursdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Central, with your hosts Patty Wyatt and Lisa Jernigan. This show is your chance to share, learn, laugh, and connect with other women. The Girlfriend It principle was born out of loss.
Lisa had recently had her mother pass away from cancer, and my mom was murdered. A man just walking into a room and started a 23-second shooting spree.
I think one of the things we both realized going through those tragedies that you can be extremely okay and be extremely sad.
Check out GirlfriendIt.com and then be a part of Girlfriend It, the radio show. Thursdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Central.
You know, your boyfriend or your husband or whatever, they don't totally understand that emotional side to a woman like another woman does. And I think that's so important, just to have somebody that you go, she gets me.
Check out the website, girlfriendit.com. Don't miss Girlfriend It with Patty Wyatt and Lisa Jernigan, Thursdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host.
Welcome to Author Voices on Air, and I'm your host, Rick Bell. Our next book is Think, 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 The Law of Attraction for Kids, which is a children's book that demonstrates the power of positive thinking. And joining me now to tell us more about the book is the author, Michael Dietrich, from Ontario, Canada. Welcome to the show, Michael. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, thank you, Rick. It's certainly my privilege and honor to be here with you on the show.
Now, as mentioned during my introduction, this is a children's book with a positive message, but we'll talk about that side of it in a little while. But before we do that, let's talk about how the book came to be, where you got the idea, and how the idea turned into a published book. Tell us that side of things.
Okay. Well, to begin with, back when I was, a young teenager, probably 13, 14 years old, I picked up a book called, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And I read that, and that kind of turned me onto the idea of how thoughts can impact our physical life, basically. And I was interested in teaching. I always was fascinated by kids. I enjoyed interacting with kids. When I was younger, I worked as a babysitter, and I enjoyed reading to the kids. And I always enjoyed reading Dr. Seuss books. And I loved the rhythm and the rhyming of Dr. Seuss books and the fun messages. And so, probably in my 30s, I got married at 25. I had ended up having four kids. I now have five grandkids. And while my kids were young, I loved reading to them. I took a couple of mail order courses on pedagogy, or the teaching skills, in particular teaching children. And I just loved interacting with my kids. And I loved finding ways to help my kids learn things and be excited about life. I didn't want them to have a negative, dreary, sad childhood. I want them to be happy, so they grow into happy adults. So that just basically set the stage for many, many things that came up later in life. And at the time that I got the idea for the book, I was living down in the States, in the state of Utah, and I had a lot of associates and friends who worked for a company that did coaching for the author and inspirational speaker, Joe Vitale. And one of the people gave me a copy of a book that one of their students had written for children that was about helping kids understand positive thinking. And I looked at the book and I thought, well, you know, they did a pretty good job. And I was interested in how many other books were out there. So I checked around and I saw some other books on the law of attraction by some really famous authors. I ordered those, read those. And I thought, you know, these are all great books, but they all seemed to take an approach of trying to teach a principle to a child outside of a story context. And I had learned earlier that a story context, children love stories because their imaginations are alive, their imaginations are vivid, and anything they're hearing theoretically in the world doesn't make sense to them unless they put it and can integrate it into their life through a story, typically speaking. Not always, but that's kind of a general way that children think. And I thought, well, let me start thinking about, you know, I wonder if I can write a book, a good book, about the law of attraction that would be for kids, that would help kids, because kids are so, they're like sponges. They're just soaking up everything around them. And I said, there's so much negativity in the world. I want to contribute something positive to these younger kids, to this generation. And so I just sat down and I just started thinking, and I jotted down a few words. Then I remembered how much I enjoyed Dr. Seuss books, reading Dr. Seuss books out loud to my kids. And I just started coming up with ideas. It was almost like I was channeling, Rick. It wasn't really like I was using my own personal brain to come up with the words that were coming out. I just started literally, I wrote the entire book, at least the rough draft of the entire book, in probably 6 hours straight. I was home, I was alone, nobody was bothering me, and I just started writing and writing and writing and writing. And I had the first rough draft of Think, the Law of Attraction for Kids, in about 6 hours. And I just became very excited about it. I went back and I read it. I thought, wow, this is really, I like it. I looked at it. I could hardly believe that I was the one who had written it. So I just started editing it and enhancing it and tweaking it. And I worked on it for a few more months to get it refined to the point where I was really happy with it. And I really felt, I always try to put myself in the position of a child listening to the book or reading it to see if it resonated with the child within myself at the child level. And I think I got to that point when I ended up with the finished product. And I'm a horrible artist. I can barely draw a stick figure, but I knew that the book had to be illustrated also. So along with every few stanzas, which each page has just a couple of stanzas on it, I drew stick figures of what in my mind I wanted an illustrator to create for me so that it would convey in pictures, in art, what I was saying in words. And so I went through every page and I created my little stick figures of what I wanted the characters in the book to be doing. And I started looking for illustrators and artists. And that took me almost 2 years to find an artist who I thought was good enough to do what I wanted to do and who was willing to jump into the project with me. And that was Dean Vigyakon. And he was a professional artist, but he was willing to partner with me on the book and jump in and start working on the illustrations, which he did. And, I mean, absolutely it was like our minds were so much in sync. Every illustration he came up with was so perfect. It was just exactly what I had envisioned in my mind. And so basically that was how the book was born. Through the contacts and friends that I had that worked with Joe Vitale's coaching program, I got a copy of the book to Joe Vitale and asked him to write an endorsement for it. He actually ended up writing the foreword to the book as well as an endorsement for me. He loved the book, thought it was just a fabulous book. And so I was very blessed and fortunate to have Dr. Joe Vitale put together the foreword and an endorsement for me. And then inspirational thinker and author Byron Biro, I got a copy of the book over to him too through some people I knew, and he also wrote a beautiful endorsement for the book because he sincerely just thought the book was great and had a great message.
And that is wonderful. And one of the things I loved about it was, as you mentioned there, when you were talking about how the book came to be, is the fact that you put a lot of thought into not only writing a book for children, but you, I guess you could say you wrote the book almost as a child, in fact. Now, that brings me to my next question. When you were writing a book, when you came up with the idea of the book, did you write it as a book to be read to children or by children or both? And also, what sort of age group did you have in mind as the reader for this book?
Great, very good questions. The biggest target age group I'd say would be from 4 to about 8, 9, or 10. I wrote it as something that parents and grandparents could, set the child on their lap, open the book, and just start reading, or have the child sitting next to them or in front of them and read the book, looking at the illustrations at the same time, and just connecting and sharing with the child something that is so vital and so vibrant and enriching as the message of thinking positively can impact and make that child's life better and positive and happy.
Without giving too much away, and just for the benefit of our listeners, to give a little taster, tell us a tiny bit about some of the characters and the story in the book, just as the scenes in the book, just a little bit, a little sample or a taster, if I can ask that.
Okay, all right. Well, I didn't give anybody in the book a name except what I would call the antagonist, who was Wooly the Bully. I start out with a young boy, probably 6 or 7 years old. You know, in those illustrations, that's about what he looks like. And he basically is already in the mode. So the book starts out, think, that's what I'll do. I'll think until my dreams come true. So I kind of go through, this main character is thinking about and reviewing in his mind how things are, how his thoughts make him happy. And then as he's in the midst of thinking these positive, happy thoughts, he gets struck by this idea. He envisions this bully that he knows of named Wooly, who is coming at him, looking at him, and he's terrified. And so I go through the process of him delving down into the dark depths of feeling fear and terror, fear of being beat up and thrown in the gully, the muddy gully by Wooly. And so he's going down into this, the depths of despair and fear. And then later on in the, after a few pages of that, he stops himself. And this is an important part of the book. It's not just that positive thoughts can make you happy, but one of the very important messages here is that we as humans, even as children, we have the power to make the choice of what we're going to think. We can choose our thoughts. We can change our fears into courage, and we can change our depression into happiness by choosing thoughts that will lead us there. We're not the slave of our thoughts, but we are the master of our thoughts. And so the main character, who does not have a name, stops himself and says, wait a minute, what am I doing here? I'm going to start thinking positive thoughts. I don't have to think all these negative thoughts. And so it goes through the process then of him thinking happy, imaginative, and funny things about Wooly. And then eventually he does bump into Wooly in the book. And instead of getting beat up, they reach out, shake hands, give each other a hug, and they're good buddies from that point on.
How would you describe this book to our listeners? And what would you say makes it, what's the one thing that you would say makes it stand out?
Well, essentially, kind of like a real quick synopsis of the book is just that it's a very lively book written in a Dr. Seuss rhyme style with rhythm and rhyme that appeals to children's mind and kind of gets in sync with the vibrations of the human mind. It's written for and at the level of children, and it's written in a story form, which I believe is what's lacking in a lot of the other books I read. Most of the other books I read seem to be trying to convey a message of how the law of attraction works in our life by just explaining the law of attraction in children's words, but it didn't really go in and do it in a story form. I'm not saying that there are no other books out there that do that. I'm not aware of them if there are, but the ones that I looked at just did not convey that. And so I just felt like this book is unique in the fact that it is a story form. It's a very intriguing, interesting story form. It has, the hero and the villain. It has a lot of emotion in it that children understand, that children go through. Children understand happiness. Children understand fear. Children understand being, having fun with their friends. They also understand what it's like to be afraid of being bullied. And I think at some level, children, even when they're not exposed to this, have at least the intuitive belief that they do have the power to make choices and change their lives.
Absolutely. Now let's go back to writing this book. Now, as a first-time author, you must have faced some unique challenges. I mean, it's a children's book. It's a book that you've done a lot of research on. Tell us some of the challenges that you faced as a first-time writer. And on the positive side, it is a book about being positive, so on the positive side, what for you gave you the biggest reward?
One of the big challenges that I had to face was that technical part of putting together the rhythm and the rhyming of the book without distracting from the message. But instead of distracting, it actually enhanced the message. And that was pretty much it. That was the challenge, basically.
And what was the biggest thrill, the biggest pleasure, the biggest excitement that you got from writing this book?
Well, initially, the excitement was when I would go back and look at it and read it, I would go, wow, I can't believe I wrote that. That's really good. I mean, I don't mean to brag. I'm not saying that in a arrogant way whatsoever, but it was almost because I kind of give credit to the universe for helping the words flow. But it just made me feel like, wow, this is really resonating. And then as I had a lot of friends and acquaintances read the book and give me feedback, I mean, they were just like, wow, this is great. Even adults should read this book. So I literally got nothing but very enthusiastic, sincere feedback from every single person who read the book. For me, that just made me feel really good. And I just thought, wow, this is great.
And has it left you with that desire to continue writing? Can we look forward to, for example, a second book in the series, or maybe are you working on something different? What does the future hold for you as a writer?
I am absolutely planning on writing other books in the same genre. I've already actually written some a few ideas down. When I'm driving in my car, if I have an idea, I will record it on my cell phone because I'm not going to write while I'm driving, but I'll make a little recording. So I have a lot of ideas about positive subjects that I would like to continue writing about for children. And I want to continue using this poetic Dr. Seuss rhyming style. And I'm planning on using the same artist to illustrate the books for me. And I'm hoping to create, I can literally envision another 8 or 10 books coming out in this that will be similar to this book in terms of their impact on kids, helping them discover positive things in their life.
And we'll certainly look forward to that. Now, in closing, you've covered a lot during the interview, a lot about the book and a lot about your journey as a writer. But is there anything that we haven't mentioned so far during the interview that you feel is important for our listeners and for your readers to know about this book?
I just really would be honored every time somebody buys the book and reads it to children. I'm just hoping and praying that it will be a tool in their hands to help the children in their lives have richer, happier, more productive, enjoyable lives.
Thank you. Think The Law of Attraction for Kids is published by Balboa Press and is available direct from the publisher at balboapress.co.uk and all good book stockists. Once again, I'd like to thank my guest today, the author Michael Dietrich, for joining me on the show. Thank you, Michael.
Oh, thank you, Rick. It's been a pleasure.
And we wish you every success, not only with this first book, but with the other books in the series. This is Rick Bell for Talking It Radio 2.0. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing. Join us again next week at noon Eastern.